this, to me, is the highlight, is being able to learn from people like Mark Scovron. You know, quite often, we all have people in our lives that are eager to give us coaching and mentoring, which is purely based on theory. In many cases, that person has not even achieved even close to what it is that you want to achieve. And the world lacks people who coach and mentor from personal experience. And I'm going to turn this portion of our call over to someone who always coaches and always mentors from personal experience. He lives his life with the ultimate integrity. Mark Scovron, someone who's devoted the past 30-plus years devoting himself to self-improvement and really perfecting his craft. He's one of the top coaches and mentors in the consumer direct selling industry, and he ranks in the top 1% of entrepreneurs worldwide. Mark's absolute gift is in showing others how to build businesses from their home, replace their career incomes, live out their passion, and be their own boss. And ultimately, that gives people the ultimate choices. So I encourage you really to get yourself into a quiet place where you can take notes, get ready to learn from the best of the best. And I'm going to turn this call over at this moment to my great friend, my business partner, Mark Scovron. So take it away, Mark.
Hey, Jeff, thank you very much for your very generous introduction. I, too, want to take a moment, welcome everyone to the call tonight, and tell you that we don't take it lightly that you schedule this time in, not because we need you to be on the call. To be quite honest with you, I don't mean that to sound arrogant. We don't really need you to be on the call, but we do look at you being on the call as a serious investment of your time and how really serious you are about wanting to get better in life and in your business. And as a community leader, as a family member, as a son, as a daughter, as a parent, all of those different things, all those different roles that you have in your life. I was fortunate in my early 20s to make friends with a coach and a mentor who, you know, taught me many things. And since then, I've had many coaches and mentors along the way. But in my early 20s, figured out that at any moment of my life that I failed to get better, it's kind of like an apple on a tree. You know, an apple goes through a period of growing and becoming more ripe and more ripe and more ripe until it's ready to be plucked and eaten. And there is this moment. Scientists and farmers alike will tell you there's a moment in the life of the apple when it is at its peak. It's exact. Who can determine that second, really? But there's this exact second when the apple is at the point of perfection of ripeness. From that second forward, the apple begins slowly to die and becomes less and less ripe. Now, over a period of time, of course, but it's like up until that second. Now, as humans, we have many different gifts and we have many different abundances that the other animal kingdom and the vegetable kingdoms and all that kind of thing don't share. We have the ability. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. You have the ability to make a choice to never, ever reach that peak of perfection where you start to then die and wither and become less valuable to yourself and to the planet. We have the ability to decide, actually, to always get better, to always improve our value to our children and grandchildren, to our parents, to our community, to our places of worship, to our business and our business partners. And I just applaud you for being on this call because it lets me know that you're that kind of person. But let's go ahead and jump into the training. I know that's what you're here for. As most of you are aware, I've been teaching, and this is a free course for you, but the course is called You Were Born Rich. And it's over a total of 6 consecutive weeks. It began with the introduction a couple of weeks ago. The course is an adaptation from Bob Proctor's course by the same name. The audio series sells for $595, and the actual course, if you were to take it live, costs much, much more than that. We realize that most people simply do not either have the means or will not make the decision to spend that kind of money on a course, so we decided to make it available. In fact, we're going to make this course available. Jeff and I were talking about it. We're going to make this course available to all of our friends, business partners, and teammates at least once a year because we feel like it's that important of a course. Now, what we've done is studied the course intensely and distilled the most important information and technology from the course, and we're going to be making it available to you for free no strings attached. All you have to do is put in the time and listen to the course and hopefully put it to work in your life. 2 weeks ago, we did the introduction to the course to get you ready on November 7th, explain the course and how to prepare. On November 14th, a week ago, we did Section 1, which we got a lot of reviews on. Thank you very much for that. And tonight, we're going to be doing Section 2. Section 2 is going to be especially exciting for you. It's actually one of my favorite parts of the course. We'll be talking about that in just a minute, but let's go ahead and review the major points from last week's section to kind of have you in the right frame of mind. Consider this, that money will have a greater influence on your life than almost any other commodity that you can think of. Indeed, the sudden loss or acquisition of money will affect your attitude to a tremendous extent. Most people either overestimate the importance of money in their lives and allow its attainment to displace equally or more important objectives such as their family, relationships, spirituality, or health, to name a few. You see, the sad fact is that 95% of people settle for whatever they get, wishing they had more all the way from the cradle to the grave. Now, you know, the subconscious mind all along is doing its job to keep you from considering that something that will call, that there's something out there that can be called into the daylight and cause you to question things that you have perhaps held as truths for years and even decades throughout your lifetime. And perhaps they're not truths at all. And that we wanted you to decide exactly how much money you want to earn and how you want to live. We last week challenged you to decide exactly what those amounts of money were specifically for. We encouraged you to visualize and affirm, I am wealthy, money is good, I use money, and I love people. Money is my servant. And I like to say, one of my favorite affirmations that I created for myself is that money flows to me freely and constantly and effortlessly from many sources. And I always do the right things with money. We encourage you to take immediate action upon ideas that came into your head and understand that if others can accomplish certain things in this business or other businesses, then you can too. We encourage you to develop a disciplined mind and activity level around creating abundance and money. Practice visualization of seeing yourself currently earning the income you've decided on and living in a manner that you've chosen to, and realize that it is good and spiritual to do so. We talked about the word praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S, praxis, which has many different meanings depending on the way it's interpreted. And my favorite interpretation of the word praxis is act, reflect, act, continuum. So it's acting, then reflecting upon your actions and the outcome, action again, reflecting again, action again, and so forth. And so that wraps up the highlights of Section 1. There was certainly a lot more to it than that. But that wraps up the highlights of Section 1 of You Were Born Rich. So let us continue tonight with Section 2. Very, very exciting. We're going to talk about two subjects tonight in Section 2 of You Were Born Rich. We're going to talk about image making. And the second part of the section we're going to call Let Go and Let God. Now, you don't have to worry. It doesn't matter your religious or spiritual affiliation, and it does not matter if you even have one. At least in this context, it doesn't. In this context, I'm not going to be preaching. I'm not going to be teaching from any particular book of theology or pushing any kind of dogma or doctrine. We're going to be talking about absolute facts and scientific and universal laws, which are indisputable. Okay. Now, image making, let's talk about that for a few moments. Because once you get a firm grip on it and figure out what a truly dynamic idea it is, you will become convinced, as I have been for years, that it is one of the biggest causes, breakthroughs that you will ever have in your life, bar none. It's a pretty bold statement. What I'm basically telling you is that once you learn how to be on purpose about image making, your own image making, that it will be at cause for some of the biggest breakthroughs and greatest rewards that you will ever have, no matter how long you live. And I'm going to prove it to you. You see, most people live and die and never fully understand the power of image making. In fact, you may be listening to me right now saying, I don't even know quite what you're talking about. What is that? Well, we're going to be covering that, so just bear with me for a moment. Understand that we're going to be relating this idea several times to money, okay? But once you fully understand this image-making concept, listen carefully, you will be able to effectively use it for whatever good you desire. The knowledge of image making eliminates competition from your life, and it moves you from a competitive plane to a creative plane. Now, I'm going to show you what that means. This idea, for me, really excites me. And when I figured it out years ago, it got me tremendously pumped up. Because to be more accurate, I should probably say that sharing this idea with you excites me because I know how it can improve every aspect of every one of your lives if you'll just take hold of it. I honestly love watching people grow and unfold, and I've seen it over the years as these new ideas register in their consciousness and take root, and they put this technology, and yes, it's an actual technology, to work in their lives. You see, everyone that is using this image-making concept, whether you know it or not, and everyone always has, each one of you are. You might be sitting there still saying, I still don't know what image making is. But yet, I'm telling you, I don't care if you're 30, 50, or 70, you have used image making all of your life just at a subconscious and even an unconscious level. In fact, everything that has ever come into your life has come as a direct result of your image making process. So if that's true, then it would be pretty important, wouldn't you agree, to be able to get your arms around what this image-making is. Because when you make use of your image-making ability, okay, you will not make use of it in the wrong way as 95% of the population does, but you will make use of it in the right way. The first thing to realize about image-making is that you are the image-maker of your own life. Now, most religions teach that God is responsible for everything made in this world, and I would fully subscribe to this proposition. However, as co-creators, and just if that word bothers you, just give me some artistic license here. As co-creators, human beings must bear responsibility. Surely must agree about that. In fact, I'm going to tell you a story to drive home the point. The story is about a minister and a farmer. I once heard this many, many years ago, and it drove the point home exceedingly well. Many years ago, a minister was driving along a remote country road when he happened upon a very beautiful farm. The farm was kept in absolutely magnificent condition. The fences were well cared for. The crops were radiant green. And although the house was kind of set back some distance from the road, it was abundantly clear that it had a clean, fresh coat of white paint on it. Well-cultivated flower beds encircled the house and stretched all along both sides of the long, wide driveway leading to it from the road. In a neat row along both sides of the drive as well were straight lines of tall green poplar trees reaching up to a picturesque pale blue sky. The lawns that surrounded the house were a deep, rich green, and as well as manicured and putting just the most beautiful scene you can imagine, like a postcard. It was absolutely breathtaking in its splendor. Then the minister looked off to his right to the other side of the road. Here, the fields were plowed. The earth was the deepest black the minister had ever seen, and he was amazed how the furrows had been plowed in such a way that they stretched out in rows just as straight as clotheslines. Far off in the distance, the minister could see that a farmer was sitting up on his tractor with a straw hat on the back of his head and clad in an old, tight pair of blue overalls. It appeared that the farmer was moving toward the road as he was plowing. Well, since the minister was in no particular hurry, he actually pulled his car over to the side of the road, got out, and he walked over to the fence. When he reached it, he just stood still. He enjoyed the light breeze, the warm sunlight, and admired the beauty of the farm and the farmer's ability to plow such straight lines. As the farmer worked his way toward the road, he noticed that the minister was leaning against the fence, so he brought his tractor to a halt, climbed down, and slowly walked over to the minister's in the minister's direction. As the farmer got closer, the minister smiled, raised his arm and waved, and said, "My good man, God has certainly blessed you with a beautiful farm." Well, the farmer stopped. He pulled out an old red and white polka-dotted handkerchief from his pocket with his big, scarred, and calloused hands. He raised his arm and wiped the sweat from his sun-scorched brow, still not saying a word. He reached up with his other hand and gently took from his mouth the long piece of straw that had been bouncing and waving as he walked. He stood there for a moment, looking at the minister, and then finally spoke. And with a steady, slow voice, he replied, "Yes, Reverend, I guess you're right. God has certainly blessed me with a beautiful farm. But you should have seen it when he had it all to himself." See, I think that illustrates, a great story illustrates, that God, while you want to recognize perhaps God is the creator, we are co-creators with the gifts that are given us. And one of the greatest gifts, perhaps the greatest gift you'll ever have, would be that of your own life. And what you do with it starts with image making. Understand that the images are mental pictures that are made from thoughts. And the magnificence of the mind lies in the fact that you can think. That is to say, that you can tap into thought and create whatever image you want to. Now, become aware of this truth. Everything we do is preceded by an image. We think first in order to form an image, and then we do the work which ends up with the end result. In fact, consider for a moment how the first chair got built. Did you ever think about that? I bet most all of you are sitting in a chair right now. You know, we didn't always have chairs, you know. I suppose, well, I don't know, many years ago when we first started to become civilized, someone became tired of maybe sitting on the ground, do you think? Whoever this person was, he or she was probably started to think and then began to get a picture in his mind or her mind. They probably saw themselves sitting on a thing, with their legs hanging down and their back leaning against something. I don't know. Maybe it started out they got tired of sitting on the ground, so they got up on a rock, big rock, boulder. Maybe they leaned against, you know, a wall or a cave. And maybe that position was just a lot more comfortable. But before that moment, follow the thought, before that moment, this picture or idea didn't exist. But at that moment, this idea appealed to him because he imagined it would be more comfortable and a more comfortable position to sit in, certainly much more comfortable than sitting on the ground with his knees shoved up under his chin. So since this picture then appealed to the person thought of it often until a level of desire built up so that the thing began to develop in his mind. The desire moved the person into action with the picture in mind, and he began something outside of himself in his physical world that was, as close as possible, a replica of the image that he held in his mind. Once the thing was completed, the person sat on it. I wonder what that must have looked like. I wonder how comfortable that was. He let his legs hang down and his back lean, and he found that it was a good thing. And he called it a chair. So understand, though, and in fact, allow me to ask you this question. So what came first? To which you all raise your hand and reply, the image. But you'd be wrong. You'd be close. It's a trick question, but you'd be wrong. What came first was the problem. What came first was the challenge. What came first was the dilemma. What came first was the uncomfortability. How many of you listening to me right now have problems, challenges, uncomfortabilities around perhaps abundance and other things in your lives right now? Well, then you're exactly where you should be. You're at the starting line because that's what occurs first. And then the image comes. Then the image comes. Because, ladies and gentlemen, and listen to me carefully, you see, when challenges come, when problems arise, they always bring with them the answer or the solution, like two sides of the same coin. You never have a front side of a coin without a back side of a coin. It's always heads or tails. And when challenges and problems and uncomfortabilities and situations that you don't want in your life appear, and we're talking about abundance and being born rich, so we're going to kind of stick with that theme, so perhaps around money, they also come with you constantly with a solution. It just might not be so obvious. You know, Columbus imagined a new world, and you and I are living in it. The Wright brothers imagined us being propelled to the air and introduced us to a new kingdom. I don't think they had all the traffic air safety and metal detectors and all that and the strip searches in mind, do you? that sort of spoiled the idea of the whole thing. Samuel Morse imagined himself interrupting the flow of energy through metallic wires and gave us the telegraph with Morse code. Realize now that you too are the mental architect of your own destiny and that you're actually using mental faculties that everyone has. You might have formed the habit of thinking that people like those just mentioned are different than you and I. But I want you to know something, and that's that the only difference between you and them or anyone else that you respect and admire or have a great appreciation for is only in the appearance and the accomplishments. We all live in different physical bodies, and we all use our inherent mental faculties in a different way. But our basic structure, ladies and gentlemen, is fundamentally the same. You know, Napoleon Hill spent almost his entire life studying 500 of the world's greatest achievers. And he wrote a book about it called Think and Grow Rich. He said in that book, whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Just build the image of prosperity on the screen of your mind and watch what happens. You say, well, Mark, it can't be that simple. Of course it's not that simple. That's the beginning. That's the starting point. Persistence, Napoleon Hill went on to say, is a key. He devoted an entire chapter in Think and Grow Rich to persistence. The only thing which separated Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, for instance, from the rest of the world was persistence, he said. For both of these great men had an image. They had created an image. They were image makers and at a conscious level. And they would not let anyone or anything dissuade them. They were persistent. Well, you know, previously in the course, in Section 1, we explained that money is a reward for service rendered. Well, these men provided a tremendous service to millions of individuals, and their reward was in direct proportion to the service that they rendered, and our rewards are in direct proportion to the service that we render. You say, well, I need some more rewards. I need some more money. Then I guess you better get busy rendering better service. Now, that may not play well, and you may take that personally, but I'm really not committed to hurting or not hurting your feelings this evening. I'm committed to telling you the truth. You know, about all this, I have a saying. I like to repeat it all the time, particularly when something gets under my skin as it does yours, you know, a particular problem or challenge, particular thing that begins to gnaw at me. And that is a quote. I love this quote. Keep your mind on a higher image rather than a lower concern. Let me repeat that for you. Keep your mind on a higher image rather than a lower concern. And I realize, I'll be the first one to tell you from experience, that it's not always an easy thing to do. In fact, most often not, especially when you're right in the thick of it. But it sure pays great dividends for the person who develops the mental strength to do it. And that is what it takes, mental strength, to build your image And I challenge you with this training call moving forward. Become aware every moment of every day you are building your image. You are creating your image. You're creating your future with your thoughts constantly. Constantly dictating end results. You're constantly dictating what's going to happen later today or tonight. You're constantly the architect of what your life will look like later this week. And I promise you, you are the producer and the director and the actor and the supporting cast, and you are the orchestra and everything in the play that is your own life. I'm going to read right from the lesson. I'm going to read you a story right out of the lesson plan that's an experience by Bob Proctor, who's the author of the whole course. And he calls it Paul Hutsey's story. The gentleman's name is referring to as Paul Hutsey, and I'm going to go ahead and just read to you the story. He's Bob Proctor speaking. He says, "I would be remiss if I concluded this chapter, this section, without sharing Paul Hutsey's story with you. It all began when I received a telephone call from Charlie Beck, who was the vice president of sales for the Southwestern Home Office of the Prudential Insurance Company of America in Houston, Texas. He invited me to speak at the company's regional business conferences to be held in Toronto, Canada. He explained they had four different regions, and each region was coming in for 3 days to work for the conference. This meant that they wanted me to work in Toronto for approximately 12 days. Although I was living in Los Angeles at the time, Toronto was my hometown where I grew up. My family and friends all lived there, so naturally the idea appealed to me. When I asked Charlie how long I could have on the program, he said, about an hour. I think it is worth mentioning at this point that I have not as yet learned to teach anyone, much less in an hour, and I told him so. I explained that if he would give me two mornings on the program with each region, I would be glad to come and do the job for him. I wanted 2.5 hours each morning. Charlie's southern accent was interrupted by a real deep belly laugh as he explained that they had never done anything like that in the 100-year history of Prudential. All of their executives had to take part in the program, and so they never gave anyone outside that much time. However, I stood firm. I gave him the name of a couple of the vice presidents in his company who I'd worked with and suggested that he call them and find out if my idea had any merit. But as I hung up the phone, I did so rather reluctantly because I really wanted that job. I must admit that I was somewhat surprised, therefore, when one of Charlie's aides phoned me back to say that they were going to go ahead and go for it. He also told me he didn't know how I had talked Charlie into doing it, but I was giving two mornings on the program. I made up my mind right there on the spot. I was going to leave these people with something special. Now listen to that part. I made up my mind that I was going to leave these people with something special. That's that service rendered part. And if they chose to use it, they could literally change their lives overnight, not to mention what it would do for their sales records. I was going to speak on the power of an image, or, to be more specific, the power of self-image and the benefits of holding a positive one. At the conclusion of the program for one of the regions, a gentleman came up to me and said it was imperative that he talk to me. He said he had a problem and felt that I had the answer to the problem because he was impressed with the ideas that I'd explained during the seminar presentations. There were approximately 200 people in each one of these conventions, and I explained to this man that many of the people wanted to talk to me, but I did not have time to talk to everyone individually since I was only one person. I also explained to him that I had another appointment and had to leave immediately to be there on time. Still, he was persistent, so I agreed to meet him the following morning in the coffee shop for breakfast. I can remember our meeting as if it were yesterday. The two of us sat down just inside the door of the coffee shop at the Hyatt House Hotel on Avenue Road. As soon as we sat down, he started talking. He informed me that he had to tell me something about himself so that I could understand the problem. He said that he did not want me to think he was bragging, but it was necessary for me to have this information. He began by telling me he was a good man, and I already knew that by looking at him. I could feel that about him. He then went on to explain that he had worked for Prudential for more than 20 years, had been in management for all but two of those years, and he concluded by saying, "I'm a good manager." Next, he stated he had a good record, good people, and he was well respected by the executive staff of his company. No sooner than he uttered those words than Charlie Beck and Dick Merrill, the senior vice president from Houston, came walking in. They came over to our table, congratulated Paul on his year, exchanged a few words with us, and then went to their own table. Paul and I sat down again and resumed our conversation. He said, "You know, they meant what they said. I knew it was true. It wasn't mere flattery. It was sincere, merited compliment that Paul had received from his two senior executives. Finally," he said, "now this is my problem. I run a district office in Wichita, Kansas, one of over 500 offices Prudential has. Our office stands in 175th place, number 175. Now," he said, "that's not bad, nothing to be ashamed of." And it wasn't. It was a fairly good standing. He said, "My problem is I know that we're good enough to be in the top 100, and we're not." Ladies and gentlemen, let me pause for a second. And do you ever look at your life and think maybe things are going okay, but know that it could be better? Know that you could be better? Know that you could be a cause for better things? Perhaps that's what Paul Hutzler was thinking at that moment. He says, "Every year I go for it, but I never seem to be able to make it. At the time I knew what," he says, or Bob Proctor says, excuse me, Bob Proctor says, "at that moment I knew what the cause of Paul Hutzler's problem was. I explained to him that he was letting the sales sheet dictate the image he was holding in his mind." I'm going to repeat that to you. He was letting the sales sheet, he was letting his standing, he was letting the fact that it said 175th place, he was letting that dictate the image he was holding in his mind. He saw himself as being number 175, and he was doing his utmost to move into the top 100. He worked hard, he worked with his people, and as he previously explained, he had good people, he had the right people. "I showed Paul that it was imperative that he see himself in the top 100 regardless of what the sales sheet said. In other words, he had to act currently as if he were already in the top 100. You're picking up on these points, right, ladies and gentlemen? He had to become mentally what he wanted to be on a physical plane first. He also had to learn how to communicate this idea to his entire staff. Suddenly, I started to see the lights go on in Paul's mind. We talked for a while longer, and I explained as much as I could about the mind to him, how it worked, and especially about the power of holding the proper image there, about becoming an image maker. Paul thanked me for the time I had given him, and he returned to Wichita, Kansas. As his region moved out of the Hyatt House, another one moved in. But about a day or so later, I received a long-distance phone call from Wichita, Kansas, and it was Paul Hutze. He said he wanted to know where I would be holding seminars and when the conferences were completed. I told him I would be in Southern Illinois for Prudential's Midwestern home office. He then asked me if he could join me and travel with me for 2 or 3 days. Well, I explained to Paul that I already had made a deal with Charlie Beck to do our entire series of seminars for the whole week of the Southwestern home office at one of the chosen sites that was Paul's town, Wichita. Nevertheless, since we weren't going to be there for at least 6 more weeks, he explained he wanted to join me immediately. So, at his expense, now listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, at his expense, he flew 600 miles one way to spend 3 days with me. We went together from Litchfield, Illinois, to LaSalle, Illinois. We spent hours talking as we were driving from one city to another, and he sat in each seminar and took copious notes all day long. In the evening, he would spend more hours conversing with me. Finally, Paul returned to Wichita and started to apply these ideas. Specifically, he started to work with his proper image and image making, and as a result, the sales started to climb. For some strange reason, Paul's superiors saw fit to move him from Wichita, where he had been for a number of years, to Pittsburgh, Kansas, where the district office stood at number 163. Now, this certainly didn't seem like a very fitting reward for all of the effort he had advanced on the company's behalf. Still, Paul accepted the move as a challenge, and a mere 6 months later, he moved that office from number 163 to number 11 in the entire Prudential insurance company. Each year, Prudential recognizes the top 52 districts, which is the top 10%, by awarding them a citation. The Pittsburgh district had not had this citation in years. But just short of 6 months after Paul Hutsey took over the helm, they were in the top 2%. Just 2 years later, they missed the number one spot by a matter of a couple percentage points. And today, Paul Hutsey is Senior Vice President of Sales, Houston, Texas, for the Southwestern Territory. Clearly, he is a man, Bob Proctor says, who learned well the awesome power of image making and holding it in the mind. If you were to talk to Paul Hutsey today, he would be quick to tell you that he will never let present results dictate the image he holds in his mind. I'm going to repeat that. He said that he would never let present results dictate the image that he holds in his mind. Rather, he holds the image of what he wants and then acts as if he already has it. Wow. So what do? You have a certain standing in life. You have a position. You have a challenge. You have a problem. You have this image-making history that's gone on. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you start with where you are. You build the image of what you want, and then you act as if you already have it. Now, I'd be careful. I might not extend that all the way to my charge cards until you start to see the income start to grow. But you act as if you already have it. You act like the person you want to become. There's a great quote by Goethe that says, before you can do something, you must first be something. See yourself already in possession of what you previously only dreamed of. Become extremely conscious of the truth that your entire being is not only filled with, but it is also surrounded by this understanding, and that the application of wise thoughts count in your image making. Understand the application of this are the keys that will unlock the door to your truly abundant life. Now, in image making, it goes hand in hand with the second and much shorter part, which is let go and let God. And this part is going to go pretty fast and furious. See, how many times have you been faced with what appeared to be an insurmountable problem, and you silently wished you could turn it over to somebody else for a solution? Wouldn't it be fantastic if there was some magic formula that would just give all of us the things we want and permit us to live the way that we choose? Well, I'm here to tell you that there is. And it has been around since time began. No person, thing, or circumstance will ever intimidate you again if you get your mind around this. Your days of idle wishing will be brought to a halt. Happiness, health, and prosperity, yes, they're going to follow you all the days of your life, and you will spend the rest of your years wanting to share, obsessed, as Jeff Pelton and I are, obsessed with wanting to share these understandings with everyone and anyone that's willing to take the time to listen and to learn. But be aware of something else, and I'm going to warn you. Many of the people whom you try to share these new ideas and these new awarenesses with are simply not going to be ready for it. In fact, clearly 9 out of 10 people might go so far as to laugh at you and tell you that you're odd when you have shared your formula, which is let go and let God. See, you have to understand that potential is everywhere, always. Understand this. Everything you see in this universe, including yourself right now, is nothing but the expression of an infinite power. Now, this power is forever flowing into and through you. Scientists will tell you that everything is energy. Now, I kind of choose to say that everything is spirit. But for centuries, there has been a select group of people who are the real thinkers. These individuals have always known there was a power which permeates, penetrates, and fills the interspaces of the cosmos, and that everything you see around you is an expression of that power. The power operates in a very precise manner, which is generally called law, or laws of the universe, or scientific laws, sometimes spiritual laws. In other words, everything comes from one source, and that source power always flows and works to and through the individual. Now, that's you I'm talking about. Stated differently, the image that you have formed can only come to you on the physical plane of life, now that's your results, in one way, and that way is by the law of faith. Now, everyone has their favorite definitions and scriptures and sayings about faith. I came about one many years ago. My favorite thing to say is that faith is the ability to see the invisible and believe the incredible. And that is what enables believers to receive what the masses think is impossible. I'll repeat that again. Faith, my personal faith, is the ability to see the invisible and believe in the incredible. And that is what enables me to receive what the masses think is impossible. I've fallen in love with this particular definition and way of expressing faith. I've shared it with thousands of people over the years. You know, using a slightly different vocabulary, I would make this observation. If you can show me a person who achieves great things, I'll show you a person who has great faith in his God-given ability to achieve what he images or image makes. In fact, there is absolutely no question in my mind that faith has always been the miracle worker throughout history. It is the connecting link between God and you, and therefore it is your most valuable non-physical possession. In truth, it is the cornerstone to everything you'll ever build or achieve during the course of your entire lifetime. Comparatively few people today realize just how much faith in oneself, you know, that part of oneself which is spiritual and perfect, is what I'm talking about, has to do with achievement. Because the great majority of people never seem to conceive of faith as being a genuine creative force. Yet the truth is that not only is faith a bona fide power, but it's the greatest one that we will ever encounter. In fact, I would go so far as to say to you right now during this training that whatever you accomplish in your lifetime will be in direct proportion to these two things. Number one, your intensity, could be said your passion, and so forth. And number two, the persistence of your faith. You see, the trouble with most people, they fail to realize, who fail to achieve what they desire, is that they lack, not that they lack the ability to do so, but they lack the faith that is necessary in a let go, let God principle of partnership, which dictates whatever is necessary for us to reach our goal will indeed occur. We do not believe we can simply tap into a great spiritual reservoir that lies within us to make connection with divinity, all supply, or whatever else you wish to call that power which sustains each one of us. However, let me make something clear to you as you listen to me tonight. If you fail to make this connection in your own mind, if you fail to take image making and connect it to a spiritual plane, if you lack the divine self-confidence born of faith in the omnipotent power that surrounds you and flows through you constantly, you're never going to be what you could be. You never are going to have what you could have and even rightly deserve under other circumstances. All of your prayers are going to return to you unanswered. Your best efforts will bear no fruit. Your negative attitudes will thwart the realization of your goal. In fact, your negative attitudes will thwart good people out of your life and draw into your life people and circumstances and results that you really don't want. What did I say last week during the training? Job said, that which I fear has come upon me. Well, of course it did. Let's reverse that saying. What came upon you is what you were constantly being afraid of. You see, the mind is saturated with, or a mind that is saturated with fear of failure or images of unwanted results can no more accomplish, create, or produce anything of value than a stone can violate the law of gravity by flying upwards in the air. You have to understand this is a law in the universe put in force by the Creator, and it won't be contradicted. You must realize the Creator does not alter the law of gravity to accommodate a person who walks off the roof of a house. A person walks off the roof of a house or a bridge, you know what's going to happen? They're going to fall to the ground 100% of the time. Similarly, the creative principle of the law of achievement cannot be violated. Therefore, you will achieve what you desire. You will be what you long to be, but only when you become obedient to this law of life. Once you become aware of your kinship through image making with the creative power, and that you're a true child of spirit, you cannot possibly be anything other than positive, forceful, radiant, and self-reliant in your dealings with the world, and you'll become a conqueror of those forces, problems, dilemmas, challenges that would otherwise attempt to drag you down and hold you back. And ladies and gentlemen, once this happens, all of the forces in the universe will come together to help you reach your goal or the manifestation of your image making. The point that I really want to impress upon you now as we start to move toward the end is that although spirit is the very essence of your being, it will never move into form or into a physical image without your assistance and agreement. So those people who sit back and do nothing and say, God will look after me, well, they're just fooling themselves. For since it is true that God helps those who help themselves first, it follows that you must always do your part to start, to initiate, to ignite the creative process in motion. You must always build the image and know in your heart that the image will materialize. You create a new vibration. You'll begin to feel differently. And so always remember that the new feeling coming over you is really this spirit, this God energy, this power, this law of the universe at work. And although you may sometimes express your relation by saying that you feel enthusiastic, remember this. Years and years ago, I was studying, I love to study, you know, where words come from for simple explanation. Enthusiasm is a derivative from the early Greek, entheos, meaning in God. So enthusiasm literally comes from in God or from being in spirit. Your enthusiastic attitude will in turn cause your actions to change and you will start behaving differently. Moreover, not only will you begin to act differently yourself, but ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. Here's the great part about it. Because of this new vibration that you are in, you will begin to gravitate toward and to attract toward you other like-minded people and circumstances and conditions. Strange and wonderful things will begin to happen to you with such regularity that you will be at a loss to even explain or to comprehend what is going on. So don't even make the attempt. Just understand that this is the way of the creative force and accept the good as it comes and expect more of the same in the future. Also expect something else. Expect that people will say, you just got lucky. You were in the right spot at the right time, which is going to be true. You were in the right spot at the right time, but you did something about it. You took action. You see, on the surface, it might appear from time to time that things are not going well, and you may begin to worry that you're moving in the wrong direction. But let me assure you, this won't be the case as long as you keep the image, this image making on purpose, this conscious image creation of the good that you desire firmly planted in your subconscious mind. Or if you do this, you will continue to move in the only direction in which you can move in order to get to where you want to go. And by the way, don't forget, it's never sufficient to believe in yourself, that part of you which God created in His image, only when you feel particularly enthusiastic or when some particular good fortune has befallen you. It is never adequate to have faith sporadically or when it suits you or when everything's going your way. To get enthusiastic over your prospects and then to undermine all of your mental kingdom. You've got to guard your faith zealously. You've got to have this constantly, as you would your most precious possession, because, by the way, perhaps it is, and ensure that it'll be never imperiled by weak, downhearted, or negative thoughts. Doubts, fears, pessimism, and negative thinking poison the very source of life. They will sap your energy, your enthusiasm, your ambition, hope, faith, and everything else which makes life purposeful, joyful, and creative. You must constantly entertain only the mental allies of your ambition for those attributes which help you realize the manifestation of your goal. For when you are firmly grounded in faith, negative thoughts will have no power over you because they will not be in harmonious vibration with this new image that you created by image making. You know, just a couple more things to say. What about negative thoughts? Mark, will this make my negative thoughts go away? Absolutely not. It'll limit them. It'll act in this new way day after day, week after week, month after month. You'll have a lot less of them, I promise you. But they'll come in. Negative thoughts just come in. You know, the author and seminar lecturer and just great, one of the greatest teachers of the day, Byron Katie, who's one of Jeff Pelton's favorite teachers, by the way, she likes to say this very simple thing. Thought appears. You know, somebody will complain, you know, I'm thinking about this, or I'm worried about this, or I'm fearful of this. Byron Katie says, thought appears. See, it may be negative or unhappy. It just happens. So what do you do at that moment? That's what counts. Years ago when I was in my 20s, one of my mentors was the pastor of my church, and I asked him about negative thoughts, and what do I do about these negative thoughts? And he said, Mark, just because a bird lands in your hair doesn't mean you have to let it just because a bird lands in your hair doesn't mean you have to let him make a nest there. By the way, that is when I had hair, by the way, for those of you who know me. Okay, let's finish up here real quickly. There should be no force associated with the manifestation of your image. You shouldn't have to force things. Trying to do it your way by forcing things to happen is not really the spiritual way to go. Therefore, therefore learn to follow the quiet voice within you that speaks in feelings and emotions and intuitions rather than words. Follow what you hear, what you sense, what you feel inside at a deep level rather than what others may be telling you to do. Be aware that the quiet voice within often tells you to do things which will run counter to the way most people live their lives. In fact, here's a rule you can follow. Mostly, if you're heading the opposite way of 95% of the people, you're heading in the right direction. But do not be unduly concerned over this. Many of the world's greatest leaders were considered to be heretics by their peers, simply because they chose to march to the tune of a different drummer. These individuals were following that quiet voice within them rather than doing the things considered to be fashionable in their day. Let your image, making, and let it sink deep into the treasury of your subconscious mind. Let yourself get totally and emotionally involved with this image that you have created on purpose and recognize that it is good. Understand, moreover, that if you should falter, and you will, for any reason, and go your own way, the minute you recognize your error and then reaffirm your image and get back on track, that spirit will pick right up where it left off when you choose to take over the controls. Then you will instantaneously be back in the right vibration and on the correct pathway leading to success in life. Okay, practice image making on purpose and your partnership with God, the universe, and universal law this week. Practice staying on track with that still, quiet, and yet intentional voice inside. Quiet your surroundings by eliminating all of the useless clutter that most people fill their lives with. Soap operas, reality television, most of television in general, if you want to know the truth, most of the news in general, gossip, all these negative things. Become intentional about what and who you are around. Practice what I call the law of disassociation to things, and yes, even people. I got news for you. Some of the best things that I've done in my life has been disassociated myself from some people, even family members. It's not about you being better than them. It's about you being different. It's about you being centered in a different way. And as you do so, ladies and gentlemen, you will start to notice very quickly that time will slow down, your mind will become quieter and more at ease. You will become better rested when you sleep. You'll become more peaceful and filled with purpose and intentional and sure of yourself. And then with that come all of the results. And then you get to share and pay it forward. Well, that's our training for tonight. I affirm that it benefited you greatly. Be back with us next week, Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Same call and number, same passcode, as we go deeper into You Were Born Rich and talk about two great subjects next week. This has been Mark Scovern live from Tampa Bay, Florida, and I'm grateful for our time together this evening. Create a great week, create a great image, and good night.